Real quick, before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
Magic the Gathering artist Johannes Voss has a token collection available on Kickstarter that's going on right now.
The complete cardboard token collection comes with a whopping 52 tokens, so you can be ready for anything that happens in your Commander games.
The artwork is absolutely stunning. There's a lot of whimsical creatures and beautiful settings that you can get sucked into.
The campaign ends, I should say it to the camera though. The campaign ends May 3rd, which is very soon.
So use our link in the description to check out the Johannes Voss complete cardboard token collection before it's too late.
Now let's get into the podcast.
Oh, we're still doing that?
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Yeah, that should be good, right? That looks all right, normal, I would say.
All right, cool. I like when it's all right and normal. I also like when it's not all right and normal.
A little abnormal never hurt anyone.
Little abs. Sounds like something my wife tells me all the time.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week we are doing a Q&A, popping a quick Q, popping a little A. Las Vegas is coming up. Magic on Vegas is coming. So due to the schedule being a little shifty, we're going to shift it on over to a little Q, little A.
I love that. I'm also realizing that if I'm going to do an arms thing, I should probably start working out a little bit.
Don't want to show off those little chicken wings.
Yeah, the second that I extend them out and you can see exactly how small they are and how pasty they are because they blend in with the wall, maybe you can't even see them.
You can't see them at all, so I think you're safe then.
All right, well, now that I'm feeling safe and secure, I can start answering questions.
We asked our Patreon if any of our patrons had any questions for us. That's where we're getting these questions. Have you assembled a list? Are we just running through? I would love to list the names of the people who asked the questions, give them a little shout out.
I assembled a list of them, and I also included the names of Perfect. The people who asked Wonderful. The question in them. Yeah, so I got some pre-selected ones so that I don't just sit here in silence trying to scroll through and find a question that we haven't answered before.
Good call. Yeah, there are also some hypothetical questions that we tend to avoid, so I'm sure you maybe skipped on some of those.
I also avoided a lot of the hypotheticals. And a lot of the, what CEDH card do you wish was CEDH?
I don't wish a ton, I'll be honest. I'm a doer. Yoda said that.
I was going to say, it sounded like someone on LinkedIn said that. All right, so Kyle Milton wants to know, how prevalent is Turbo in CEDH? I know Play to Win talks about it and runs it, but when you guys talk about decks that are winning tournaments, they never seem to be Turbo. Like Ragishai, Ulalek, Aang, Kinnan, etc.
I think that's a little bit of a recency thing where we've been highlighting strange decks, and particularly recently. It is true that we are a little bit Turbo slanted. Our local meta, I think, is very turbo oriented. Because they listen to our ship. So I think it's a little bit more skewed for that aspect. But I do think turbo is, like, it plays a big part of the meta. Rock'sai is a very powerful, prevalent deck. So is Rao. So is Itali. Even the best deck in the format, Blue Farm, has the ability to go pretty quick if it needs to. So how prevalent is it? I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I would say, like, moderately. I don't know that we're in a turbo meta, but I don't think we are definitively in a Rhystic Study meta, as some other people say. I think we're in a meta that has elements of both of those things. I feel it's kind of balanced.
I feel like it's kind of balanced, too, but I also feel like maybe that is just because of the amount of turbo that we tend to play and, like, play against, too.
Every pod that I play in, there's a turbo deck in it. It's me. I mean, so there's always a turbo deck in all my pods.
Me, too. If it's not me, it's you, right? Yeah. For the most part. But I feel like when I go to a tournament, a lot of the times I feel like I'm the only other turbo player in the pod if I'm not paired up against another Itali player.
Yeah, that's fair. We also don't go, honestly, to a ton of tournaments. Tournaments happen on the weekends, and that's when we film a lot of our content. So, like, it just often doesn't really work out for us to be at a ton of tournaments. That's true. But we do see a lot of tournament results, and we do a lot of locals. We do play a lot of CDH with a ton of people. I think it depends. I think on certain local metas, the meta is going to look a little bit different. In certain areas of the country and the world, the meta is going to lean more towards one direction or another. Whether you're in Swiss or whether you're in the top 16, that's also going to change things a lot. It's kind of hard to say, but my answer would be it's kind of turbo.
It's kind of complicated.
It's kind
really.
Of complicated, yeah.
Because I feel like we're kind of in the spot where both are pretty prevalent, and you kind of have to be ready to do both things, which is why, like, copying Rhystic Study is becoming one of the more popular strategies amongst the tournament players. But outside of tournaments, like, I don't know. Again, like, our locals doesn't run into that a ton.
Yeah.
And even, like, when I play online with patrons, I don't run into that a ton. I'm still seeing a lot more, I don't know, I guess conventional and more fun decks, though, yeah. I guess, at the same time. time. Either way, I do think that Turbo is still pretty prevalent. I would say it is kind of masked behind a lot of the Rissic study stuff that's going on. Just because we're not playing a lot of the Rissic study stuff doesn't mean that it's not happening out there. And I think that those decks are still winning, but they're not as interesting to talk about on the podcast every single week after week after week. Whereas when an Ulalek deck is going to win, that's way more fun to talk about on like that specific week that that happens.
Yeah. It's definitely true.
I don't know. That's what I have to say about that. Galbatrix says, how do you guys choose what decks to build? What about a card piques your interest enough to want to put a list together?
Do you have an answer for this one?
Yeah, if it's powerful.
Powerful.
And I think if
you could win a lot.
Yeah. I think I'm like a Johnny in the way that if there's like an interaction that I see is interesting, I'll really get drawn towards that deck a little bit more. I think that's what happened to me with Jessica Ishai. I think that's what happened to me with Vivi. Like once I learned about what a specific two-card combo can do and how powerful it can be, what all it can enable, that's kind of what attracts me to a deck, I think.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. For me, I'm often looking for things that are kind of either difficult to interact with or are very fast. Those are the main things that I'm looking for in a CDH deck right now. Something like Sisay, once it gets too much mana, it's sort of difficult to interact with because it can just try again over top of whatever interaction you have. Something like Ral, where you're kind of like generating a storm situation where no piece in particular is particularly relevant, just the flipping of Ral is relevant, and they have so many instances as ways to try to flip Ral again over top of a removal for Ral, and then once you get the Mind's Desire Ultimate, then like what the fuck do you do? So I like that aspect too, and then I like obviously Rog's side because I think Rog attacks the format in a super interesting way where it gets it, its advantage into play before the Rhystic Studies draw too many cards, and then you draw 30 cards while they only have drawn one or two, and then as you feed them cards, you've already seen a whole bunch of cards, so you get to protect and interact with the things that you need to. So things that like attack the format in a specific way, things that are like good into Rhystic Study, things that are difficult to interact with, things that people don't quite understand what to do against, that's normally stuff that I'm looking for.
It sounds like right now, that's what makes that really good. Yeah, but it sounds also to me like if the meta shifted, another deck that also piques your interest that attacks the meta in a strategic way that can win the game in a certain similar style, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for something that is difficult to interact with. That's the broad scope of what I want. Difficult to interact with. Right now, I think that is Ad Nauseam and Necropotence early on before Rhystic, or I think it is Sisay where the lines are complicated and confusing and you can go over top, or the lines are Rao where you can just like keep on going and no one piece in particular is super important.
I feel like in the past, like Birthing Pod is a great example of this for you too. Right. Like you historically have liked this where Birthing Pod was like just a one card win condition that after it resolved, you didn't need to cast any other spells. You can just win with that.
That was really nice because at the time, Rule of Law was very prevalent. And I thought that resolving a Birthing Pod into a Rule of Law meta was pretty good because I only need to resolve one spell. I can win through a Rule of Law and other people can't. So I thought it was really good at the time. Rule of Law is much less prevalent now, so that Birthing Pod, I think, is a little bit less relevant. But that's the main thing I'm looking for. I think a lot of times people get a little bit sidetracked with trying to win in a way that is like mana efficient. And that is important, but just having something that's mana efficient isn't always everything. So like a good example of this is Witherbloom Apprentice and Chain of Smog. That's a 4-mana win condition. It's pretty mana efficient. That's pretty good. But it's pretty easy to interact with because you can just kill the Witherbloom Apprentice and you have to go Hellbent to do it in order to get it to go off. So it's like easy to interact with. It's not difficult to interact with. So just having something be like mana efficient, that's not really good enough. It has to be like difficult to interact with. Almost confusing to your opponents on like when the exact right time is to interact with. Kinnan is pretty good for this because the time to interact with Kinnan is like when Kinnan is on the stack. You know what I mean? Like, or like just to kill one of the Birds of Paradises or something. Like it's way before it gets to the point where Kinnan's putting a win on the stack because by the time Kinnan's trying to go for a win, it doesn't matter what you have. It's
if you didn't wrath the board at any point, you're not going
to
win.
Sisay is the same thing. Like sometimes in Sisay, the thing that you need to counter is the Ragavan because it's a red pip. And once the Ragavan resolves, well now Bloomtender can tap for 5 and your counter spells don't do anything anymore. So like, it's kind of like difficult to know exactly when the right thing is to interact with. And that I think that's what I'm looking for a CDH deck.
That makes a lot of sense. Right? Yeah, that speaks to you quite a bit, I think.
Did you answer the question? You did, right?
I did, yeah. Okay. I did. So we can move on to the next question then.
Cross that one off.
Zach Canner says, as someone who used to play competitive 60-card formats at the highest levels, there was obviously a specific testing process for sideboarding and certain matchups. As I transition to the CEDH world and play in my first event this Saturday at Cloud City.
Nice.
Ayo, hell yeah. My question is, how is testing for an event for CEDH different than 60-card formats, and what do you guys do to prepare for it? Well, Zach, I'm glad that we're answering this question a week too late.
Because by the time you're watching this, it's already after the tournament. But I think it's similar and different. The biggest way, I think, is that to me, we're like kind of always training for the next tournament. I'm always like playing with the intent of trying to learn something out of every game so that I'm always sort of testing. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm playing for, is to try to gain information. But there is a difference in that there's no sideboarding. There's nothing like that. You do have to kind of understand like the matchups and like what your role is at different matchups. But as far as like what the testing goes, I think getting good testing, like practicing against players who are just as good as you or better, ideally, that's who the people you want to be playing against. But also trying to look to learn something out of each of your games. If you can try to figure out like, what could I have done better? What could my opponents done better? And sometimes I think it's good practice in testing to let your opponents know, like, you should do something here. Like, in a tournament, a good player would do something here. Like, and not try to, like, politic with your... Like, you still want to politic a little bit, but I think it's good to get good practice in practice by saying, like, hey, it's kind of obvious that I have this here. I think you're supposed to counter it. You know what I mean? I think that's good open communication to have, because in a tournament, a good player is going to make the right move there. So you want your opponents to make those right moves even in practice, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Because otherwise, you're not really getting good practice out of it. Like, you're just learning that, oh, if my opponents mess up, I can win the game. And that's not something you can really rely on by the time you get to the tournament.
Right.
Then.
Especially in, like, if you make it to top 16 or top 4, your opponents are just not going to mess up nearly as much. You know what I mean? So you want to get good practice. And even if that good practice means, like, taking a loss in a practice game, but knowing that this is what your opponent could have and should have done in a tournament situation so you can figure out how to prepare.
And it's not even just, like, getting to know your deck a little bit better, but it's also getting to, like, understand windows that come up for you to win. And like, one of the hardest things to pick up in CEDH is like when to turn the corner from being, you know, the aggressor to being defensive. Is it worth protecting your own thing versus holding up more counter spells in your hand for the next player who's going to try to push instead, so that maybe this game doesn't have to go to a draw and you can try to win at instant speed at some other point instead. I think those kind of scenarios that don't come up in like every single game, whereas like your deck works every single game, like theoretically, if you're keeping good hands, like you get to practice mulliganing every single game. But there's a lot of skills that come up in specific games that don't come up in every single game that I think it's important to highlight when those come up so that you can learn from them too. Which is also kind of why I think it is important to make sure that kind of like every game you're playing is practice. It doesn't mean that you have to be like playing for draws, because I genuinely don't think that playing for draws in your practice games is a good way to learn, because when you get to the top 16 and the finals pod, you can't play for a draw.
Yeah, I think playing for draws is a great way to make top 16. It's not a great way to win a tournament, truthfully. I think
exactly. A
good way to win a tournament is getting in the habit of how to find wins when it otherwise would be a draw. Drawing gets you in the top 16, undoubtable. But if you're going to win the tournament, you have to figure out how to win the game when drawing is no longer an option, because in top 16 and top 4, there's no timer anymore. So you have to win the game. And if not, a lot of tournaments, the way they work is like first seed will win or something like that. Like that's just what happens if the game goes to like its imaginary ending. Like you can't go forever. After 3 hours, we're going to give it to the highest seed or whatever. That player is going to move on. And if that's the situation, you're so much more favored for winning as many games as possible in Swiss rather than forcing draws.
Trying
you can,
to force
right?
draws.
Yeah. So like forcing a draw, it's a helpful technique in tournaments, undoubtedly, but you should be practicing like how to win games. That should be your goal. Yes, I could force a draw here, but could I instead also figure out a way to force a win here instead? And those are the type of things that I think you need to look for in practice games.
Yeah, like what can I say? Like practicing your politics is like the perfect opportunity to do that in these practice games too.
I had a funny game in locals the other day where I think I had a pretty good political move. It didn't end up working out, but I still think it's a pretty good move. I had a player who was going to pack the negation me, and he knew that I had interaction for him. But the other player also had Flusterstorm, and they communicated, and they said, if I packed here, you can Flusterstorm, and then we'll be able to go to my turn. And I say, wait a minute. If you instead Flusterstorm my original spell and let their Pact of Negation resolve on my Fierce Guardianship, they die on their upkeep and you get to take out a player. And then, yeah, I'll probably die too, but we get to take out a player. Player says, okay, fine, I agree. So then that happens. My win gets stopped. I go, whatever. I keep a hand that's like a very easy win if I get to my next turn, knowing that Atali is coming out and probably is going to attack me, but maybe I can say something. So this all happens. The player goes to their turn. They don't do much. The other Rockside player who had the Pact of Negation, they just die. And then we go to the other player who has the Atali, they put Kindle of the Inner Flame on the stack onto their Atali. And I have Necroimpotence in play. And I say, wait a minute. If you don't attack me, I won't kill myself. But if you say that you're going to attack me this turn, I'm just going to kill myself right now. I'm going to Necroimpotence and you're going to get one less Atali trigger so that you can't do anything. So if you give me a promise that you're not going to attack me on this turn, I will let you get away with the Atali triggers and then hope I get to my extra turn. Now, they eventually were able to find a clone off of the first one and then find a diabolic intent, and they were able to win with Food Chain, so it didn't matter. But it opened me up to a situation that otherwise would have never really happened, where they agreed they were not going to attack me in exchange for me keeping myself alive. I'm dead on board. If you choose to attack me, I'm just dead. So it doesn't matter if I kill myself or not, because I'm dead. Unless you tell me that you won't attack me, then I have a reason to live. It didn't end up mattering, like I said. But I do think if they whiffed off of that second Atali attempt, it gives me a shot. Now, of course, they could lie. And
they probably still just end up attacking you, because they go, oh, wait, yeah. I need to not lose the game now, too,
right.
After this.
They could lie, and after that, they go, all right, I am going to attack you anyway. And there's nothing I can do about that, except for the next pod that I play with this person, I tell everyone, hey, they lie. You know what I mean? That's a part of it. That's part of CDH. But I'm friends with this person. I don't think they're going to. You know what I mean? So, like, it gives me an option or a shot, whereas otherwise there would have been no opportunity. And I think practicing those things, even in your for fun games and your practice games, is a helpful way to hopefully figure out how to find a win in a real game. In a tournament, there might have been a situation where we could have done a draw. I think it was good practice to like try to fight for a win there. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. Yeah,
I rambled on enough. Should we go to our fourth question?
Let's
third
go
question?
To the next question then. Yeah, CSMFHT Shimfit says, I'm always interested that you randomize who starts, but mostly keep the same seed order, at least for Dylan and Cam. Cam always playing after Dylan must surely allow him to play a certain way. Well, you would think, but I'm certainly not finding a way to take advantage of it.
Well, kind of. You don't always play after me. When you go first, you don't play after me. You play before me in those situations, but 3 out of 4 times you do. We've switched the orders around a couple times, and we always get comments of, oh, it's confusing. You guys are on a different side now. And then when we keep on the same side for too long, we get, you guys are always on the same side. Isn't that a little weird? You're always in the same order. So, like, I keep us in that order in theory, because I think for the watching experience from a week-to-week basis, it makes more sense if we're consistently in the same spot, because I am on the left side of the screen when you watch me, my face, and then my board is on the left side of the face of the screen. I said that all wrong, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
My face and my board are both on the left side.
And same with mine.
And same with yours. So, like, that's the reason why we do it. We could, like, randomize it each time, but, like, I don't know. Like, what's it matter? It's random anyway. So, we could switch it, but then, like I said, it's a little bit like a the I don't know what the word I'm looking
continuity.
For. The lack of continuity. I think it's better for a viewing experience if it's like, it looks kind of the same week to week.
The only time that we'll change it is if the playmats need to match up a certain way. Like if we both want to use a bright red playmat, we gotta want to caddy corner them instead.
Yeah, I do that. Nice. So if there's like two, like you said, bright red playmats, I try to keep them diagonal from each other and not like bottom to the same, just because I think visually it looks a little bit better. Yeah, that's the reason, I would say.
That's just the reason. Yeah, Josh also has a content-related question that says, I always love the occasional in real life / at the table play to win games that pop up. The energy at the table always feels a little different than webcam games. Any chance we'll get more of those in the future?
There's always a chance, but no real plan. We stopped doing that at this point years ago, I think, right?
We haven't done one in years.
Yeah, in years. The real reason is it's so much more work. We get to play with so many more people when we do it on webcam, and it's so much easier to do it on webcam.
Yeah, especially like in terms of how frequently we want to be putting out episodes, it makes more sense for us to be able to do them over webcam than to try to get everyone to one specific location.
When people are all in the same room, the room gets all hot. You have to have kind of like a studio, and we could do like a whole studio setup, but personally, I don't think that the game really is that different. And we have noticed on views wise, it didn't make a difference. No one cared if we were in person or if we weren't. So the views doesn't make a difference. The vibes might be a little bit different, but like,
just tell me if I'm not funny over webcam, guys.
If all the numbers are the same and it's just like so much easier and less time consuming to do it over the webcam, we lean to that direction. Because I don't think it actually, for me personally, I don't think it loses any quality. If anything, I think it's kind of easier. Sometimes when it's in person, the microphone things gets a little bit weird. I use my phone to film. Sometimes my phone dies. We've had that happen in a situation where I didn't realize that the phone died. So we would have to get like a producer to like watch the cameras as we go. Because when we film the podcast, the camera is right here. So like,
I can see me.
We can see that it's recording. I can double check and shit.
But you would like have to stand up on a chair and like look to see if the camera's recording.
It was a whole hassle. And like, yeah, we could, like I said, we could go out of our way and do a studio thing. But at this point, like, the webcam shit is what we do. That's what Play to Win is. It's like webcam magic. That's what it is. So yeah, the real reason is it's just easier and we don't think that there's a quality loss.
Justin says, in Eternal formats, there is usually a rock, paper, scissors of archetypes to keep those formats balanced. Currently in CEDH, with Turbo taking an increasingly larger meta share of winning decks in the metagame, what steps would need to be taken in order to restore the competitive balance to the rock, paper, scissors I can't read. Wow. What steps would need to be taken in order to restore competitive balance to the rock, scissors, paper metagame of CEDH that was once combo control and stacks? Do you think the imbalance was due to printings or lack thereof, strategic consolidation, lack of competitive innovation, or something else?
Do you have an answer for this?
Yeah, I thought that combo was turbo the whole time. So I thought that we always had that competitive triangle still going on, and it was not really control because control was mid-range the whole time too. So it was mid-range and turbo and stacks, and we had this cycle where we went from, like, when we started playing CEDH, like, ad nauseum, and Flash was king, and then Flash got banned, and then Seedborn Muse Thrasios decks, like, took over, and mid-range took over. And then somehow that turned into Stacks Fest for a year.
I think number one, CDH does have a rock, paper, scissors. It doesn't seem like it does because we've been using the term mid-range to describe slow decks for a while. But realistically, the mid-range decks are the control decks of the format. They don't look like traditional control decks, but they're the ones who are forcing the game into the late game and dominating in on turn 6 or 7 or 8.
Because they're not trying to win on turn 1 and turn 2. Right. They still need to set up engines to find their win and then control the game, which means not letting other people win until right. They can win.
So I think realistically what the rock, paper, scissors looks like is one, turbo is the one pillar. What we're calling mid-range is really closer to what a control role would fill.
This is still even where like Rograk Ishai fits in
right.
Technically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then rather than a stacks deck being the other one, what I would consider of just kind of tempo, for lack of a better word, for decks that are just trying to stay alive just long enough, but still trying to win before Kinnan and Rog Ishai take over. So I would consider something like Obnixilis or Sissei, decks that don't necessarily win on turn 2, but can win on turn 3 or 4 pretty easy and pack a little bit of interaction on those turns 1s and 2s. I think those tempo strategies, I don't know if tempo is the right word, but that's kind of what I'm calling for them. The true mid-range, I think that is the other archetype.
If I'm looking for like a 60 card term to define what that is, I think it would have to be tempo because
right. They
put something that's slightly disruptive into play, like a
Ketterick Parasite that punishes Rhystic Studies and gives them advantage for their Obnixilis.
Exactly. Until they can win on turn 3 because Ketterick Parasite got them 18 cards.
Right. But they're not trying to win on turn 2 like Rog or Ral is.
Because so they physically can't.
They're not. They're not really a turbo deck, but they're not a control deck. And like, even though Kinnan and Rog Isha, we talked about this kind of a lot, but they're not like what we are used to traditionally for 60 card as control decks. They still function as a control deck. They're trying to make it to the late game, and they're trying to win once their opponents are out of resources.
What control in 60-card formats really is doing is winning with card advantage. You're finding ways to 2-for-1 or more your opponent by, like, wrathing or using Cryptic Command to counter and draw.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of different things that you can do to get card advantage in those decks, and that's exactly what the CEDH mid-range decks are doing, is they're trying to win through massive amount of card advantage and just having more cards than everyone else. And what that looks like in CEDH is playing Mirror Maid and playing Copy Enchantment and making more Rhystic Studies and Smothering Tithes than everyone else, so you can do more things than 75% of the table.
Right, and I do think that there is a triangle. I think those turbo decks do a really good job of, it's not always an exact, because we're multiplayer, the triangle isn't always exact. It kind of depends on turn order, which is like the relevant triangle more so than even like archetype. Do you know what I mean?
When you say triangle, do you mean like who tends to like beat someone out? Like,
yeah,
does the rock beat the paper or something?
Yeah, the rock beat the paper. Exactly. The rock, paper, scissors. There's like this deck beats that, that deck beats this, this deck beats that. In my opinion, Rog'Sai should beat Kinnan because Rog'Sai wins on turn 2 and Kinnan doesn't have the means to stop it exactly. But Kinnan does a really good job at stopping Obnixilis because Obnixilis is trying to win on turn 3, and by that time Kinnan is very ready. I don't know if Obnixilis is the best thing here, but those tempo decks can be pretty good at stopping the turbo decks because they have just enough to shut them down and then it can win before they do anything. But it's so much more than that because of turn order and because of seeding order and because of everything else. It's not an exact triangle because where Rog'Sai is at this table changes the dynamic completely. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that Rog is always going to be Kinnan, because if Rog goes last and there's two Kinnans in front of Rog, all of a sudden Rog's way to win is not, it's not as favored for the turbo deck. So it depends on seeding order and it depends on pod composition, because it's not just 1v1, it's you're versing three other players.
Yeah, I would also like to say that stacks is probably in the tempo category, because Deafening Silence slows the game down until you can win.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, stacks is, I feel like, kind of, that's tough, because stacks has traditionally been thought of like closer to the control route, because stacks is trying to push the game very, very late.
But there's no stacks in the format.
Yeah, and if they do try to push the game very, very late, truthfully, the Rog Ishais and the Kinnans, I think they have a pretty good matchup into those very late games.
Which is why they need to win with a combo before Kinnan is able to take advantage of all of the time that the stacks pieces get.
Right.
Which is kind of why, like, I feel like maybe they are tempo. Like they need to just like they need to find the window in between Rogsai and Itali before Tim Nacrom and, or maybe that's a bad example, but like Tim Nathrasios and Kinnan and Rog Ishai can win.
Yeah, Winota is kind of a stacked deck. Winota needs to win before the Amphibian Downpour comes. So they need to win on like turn 4 or 5 after they stacks piece, okay, and then we get the Kiki combo or whatever it is, and we win before, because otherwise, eventually, Kinnan's gonna overload a Cyclonic Rift or do whatever Kinnan's gonna do, erase all the damage that Winota has done, and then Kinnan's gonna dominate in the late game.
Winota deck started playing that Aura Touch Mage and like tried to find that one card win condition in the deck that you can spin into.
Yeah, you need to be able to win. Like, that's why Blood Pot, I used to love it so much, because it stacks the game out in the early turns, but then once it got to turn 4 or 5, it had a pretty easy way to just win the game right on the spot, and I think that was super crucial for a stacks deck, which is why Tayem doesn't really win a lot of tournaments anymore, does it? Because it doesn't really have that. It doesn't have an easy one card win con. It has a couple combos. It's like, I'm not saying it doesn't,
but it's still trying to tempo the game to a point where it can assemble multiple cards together.
Right, yeah. Which I don't think that stacks decks have. They need to be able to win off of like one or two cards.
Skylar says, what are your experiences playing Cube? Any fun stories from Cubes you've played, and or have you ever thought about building one?
You have more to say about this than I do, I'm sure.
I was into Cube a little bit more before I got into Commander, and then a lot of the cards I had in Cube just turned into Commander cards. Yeah. I do like Cube quite a bit. I played Cube recently at a local shop that does it now, and what I'm realizing is that I think the world has shifted its thoughts on Vintage Cube to what, like, the Arena Cube kind of looks like.
Okay.
And I feel like a lot of Cubes are just, like, a lot of the cards that you can play on Arena now. Like, cards that I miss playing in Cubes are, like, Opposition. Specifically, not Opposition Agent, but like you would never see Opposition in a Cube anymore, and it's way more like creature oriented. Whereas like I like Cube for like the old really powerful non-creature spells that you would get to play, and I feel like now the best thing to do in Cube is just like play a bunch of really good on curve creatures that have ETB triggers that are also spells. Like, it feels kind of way more powerful to do that instead of, like, try to draft a synergistic reanimator deck, because a lot of their good reanimator pieces have been taken out. There's, like, way fewer of them to find because it's just, like, a bunch of value creatures that are shoved into the Cube now.
So you're not as big a fan as you once were, maybe?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of older iterations of the Cube that I way more prefer than some of the more newer renditions. And again, I think a lot of the limitations have been, well, there's a lot of cards that just aren't on Arena, and if we're basing a lot of the Cubes based on where most Cube is being played, which I imagine is on Arena now, I think that's the Cube that people are going to model it after.
Yeah, or Magic Online, but probably more Arena,
I think Arena has I would imagine Arena has a bigger player base right now than Magic Online.
I think you're right. I don't know for sure, but I would probably assume
I don't
you're
know
right.
for sure either, but I know that Magic pushes Arena. Like, I get ads for Magic Arena on YouTube.
Yeah.
I do not get ads for Magic Online.
They don't want to show that.
They don't. I feel like they would just be like, oh no, people are unsubscribing from Magic Online because of the ads.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of Cube experience. I played a couple times. I normally try to force Storm if I can. I remember I have specific situations where I had a great Storm deck and then someone played Thalia mono white deck and I was like, oh, all right, yeah, I guess I can't do anything then. Yeah. No, it's cool. It's fun enough. I don't know that it sounds so bad. I don't know that I would ever really waste my time cubing if I had other stuff to do. But if I'm at like a cabin with friends and buddies over a weekend and someone's like, look, I brought this Power Cube and we can like do other shit while we're cube drafting, sure. Realistically, I would almost always rather play CDH or Modern or Legacy. If I had to choose, like CDH is what I would want to play first. Then like, it depends, but either Modern or Legacy next. Vintage would also be somewhere in there. Regular draft, just like a regular draft, I'd probably want to do that more. And then maybe there's Cube, and then all the pretend formats like Pioneer, they all exist down at the bottom.
I think that's fair, yeah. I think Cube, I had pretty high on my list of favorite formats, but it has slowly been going down the more creature-oriented the Cube has become.
I think the part of Magic that I love the most is like working on my team and modifying my team, you know what I mean? Like, I want my deck that I put the thought and the resources into, and every time I learn something different and I can modify how I play my team, my deck, whereas like when I draft, it's like, oh fuck, I'm forced into playing stupid Selesnya because I got two really good green and white cards and damn, I can't turn Bastis up, but now I have to play this archetype that I hate. Whereas like if I could just like make my own deck, I could like play all the cards that I want to play.
It sounds like you should draft more so that you don't get stuck with whatever colors you feel like you have to be in.
I feel like I can't not pick the best card in the pack. At least like pack one, pick one when I see something really good.
No, that's fine, but you don't have to like build the rest of the draft around that. If you see that like it's not...
pivot. Yeah, I guess I don't know when to pivot.
Early
maybe.
On, if you know this is not coming together, but you're seeing another deck go around,
it's
go
not
to
even
that deck.
It is coming together. I just don't like playing green-white deck. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, I'm getting all these green-white decks. Fuck, all right. My deck is good, but
I'm
have to play
gonna
this.
I'm still going
to
force Storm because, yeah. Exactly. I know, I feel that. I can't not draft blue. Like, right. It doesn't matter how few blue cards I play in queues.
They're still
like,
so good.
I still need to have the blue cards, yeah.
All right, next question.
Big Legs Banjo says, how do y'all keep from getting burnt out, not only on CEDH, but Magic as a whole? I tend to go play at my LGS 2 to 3 times a week, and any more than that, I feel I would need to take a week off or something to reset my Magic brain. Especially with the current release schedule, I need to be very intentional with what new product I interact with and mostly focus on Eternal formats where I don't really need to care. I'm sure doing it for work is much different. Curious on y'all's thoughts. My thought would be it is definitely different when you do it for work, but I was basically doing it as a second full-time job as my hobby before it was my work anyway. And I know that the new release schedule is very daunting to people where their whole life might not be Magic the Gathering to the point where it is their job too. But what I've even found is that there's so many cards that I don't need to look and interact with after my first look at them, and I never need to see them again, especially because of the realms of Magic that I'm in. I think it's really healthy in Magic to like be within your niche in Magic, and like I think there is a lot that you can get out of playing every single other format, but I don't need to play Pauper. I don't need to figure out Tiny Leaders or even Dual Commander, like these other adjacent versions of CEDH. I'm not necessarily as into them because I have my version of Commander. If I want to play another version of Magic, I'll draft or I will play 60 card formats, right? Like I don't need to have every single thing about Magic on my mind at a time, which means that because CEDH is my primary format and I know what my few decks are in my circles, like I only have a couple things that I need to focus on. This set does not have any Itali cards. I get to move past it.
Yeah.
All right. And I only need to look at a lot of stuff for the set review because a lot of things like for the set review we're wrong about and they're just going to be interesting and aren't going to actually like make the cut. And a lot of things are like that now where the power level of every single, even like casual commander decks, even in standard, is so high that like why do you need to fuck around trying to figure out every good scenario for this thing that destroys an artifact and makes you a food token? You don't. You just need to figure out what you want to prioritize in Magic and focus it on that. And then at the same time, Magic is also not the only thing that I do. Once you know, my Magic brain shuts off for the day, you know, right now I'm playing Pokemon Champions.
Same. But so much fun.
So much fun, right? But then there's also, like, Fire Emblem that I play. There's Roller... Like, I feel like I talk about my other hobbies constantly on the show, right? Like, there's so many other things that you get to do instead of just play Magic because the world is so large. So don't think that just because Magic releases things every day means that you have to interact with them.
I think when it comes to, like, specifically all of the release things, I think it's really good, like, you kind of said to pick your lane. Figure out what part of Magic that you like playing. For me right now, it's Storm. I'm focusing on fast and Storm stuff. So if a card that gets printed that's not a Storm card, I don't really need to know how good it is. Maybe I need to know how I need to beat it or something like that, but I don't need to know the entire, like for me, the draft format. I don't need to care about the draft format at all. The Mythic Uncommon of the set, I don't give a shit about that whatsoever. I'm looking for specific things that are good for my Turbo Brain CDH right now, or other formats like Modern and Legacy. I feel like sometimes I'll take my mind off of CDH just a little bit and focus on Modern for a little bit, or focus on Pokemon Champions, focus on another thing, and then always have the CDH to come back to, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And it sounds like you're going to the LGS frequently enough that, like, you're gonna hear about shit, too. If you, like, listen to content, like, you know, everyone is right now, you're going to hear about some other stuff. You don't have to feel like you need to be on top of everything yourself. Like, you can let other people do the work for you,
yeah,
and then just, like, gather information while you're doing other shit and while you're enjoying other stuff. We live in an age where everyone is ADHD brained and needs 30 different things and Subway Surfer on at the same time in order to take care of things. So I feel like that's me. I feel like when I'm ready to learn things about like champions, I'll take my dog for a walk or something and put a YouTube video on. Like there's ways that you can multitask it to kind of fit in the stuff that you need to know that you don't need to like dedicate your certain hobby time to and figuring out. Like you can dedicate other more measly time to. I guess.
Yeah, I think getting into the right circles is the first step, and then you don't need to worry about looking for all the information. Like, once you're going to the local game store, once you're in the right Discord channels, once you're in the right YouTube comments section, you're going to find the information that you're looking for. The algorithms will give it to you, your friends will bring it up. You don't have to go out of your way. You just have to, like, find the right circles. And then once you're in the circles, the information will come to you as it's relevant.
And as that's happening and you're paying attention to the stuff that's in your lane on the outside, then you can share with them the stuff that's on your lane that maybe they don't see then too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how a community works.
Community's good.
We figured that out. You know, I feel like the Mesopotamians right now. Hayden says, how do you deal with king making and or poorly timed stacks pieces? Another game.
Yeah. I don't know.
Play another game. Yeah. Scoop in.
How do you deal with it? Like try to get someone to not king make?
Yeah, I guess talking. That's really the best thing that you can do.
Explain to them, hey, I don't think this actually increases your chance to win at all. We had a game that's about to come up kind of soon recently where someone, I'm on Sisse and I'm about to win. It's kind of obvious I have 1,000 things in play. And they go, I have nothing really that I can do here, but I can attack you for 20 with my commander and I can final fortune. And then maybe with that one extra draw, I'll find something. They go to their extra turn and they go, I didn't find a win. I could just kill you, the Sisse player here right now, but I just die on my end step. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't help you win the game at all. So they decide not to. And it's kind of tricky because in tournaments, there's so many different things. You can try to fight for a draw. You can king make in order to get the draw, but that's sort of just part of the game. That's what you sign up for when you are playing a game that is a race rather than a battle. The other car in the NASCAR race that you're in could fucking tank you because they got a friend and they want the friend to win or something. Like, that sounds shitty and it's like borderline collusion, but like, that's part of the game. I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, number one, I think that's something that happens in every tournament structure is that, like, I know I've heard about that happening in like 60 card formats
a bunch of people. Friend in the finals.
Yeah, a bunch of people that already have Pro Tour invites are going to a PPTQ so that their friend can get one, and they just like concede to their friend all of the time.
Yeah, it's a part of competition, I think. And you can try
We're not like condoning
course. Like, how do you stop it? I don't know how to stop it. That's just
don't have tournaments. Don't go to tournaments. That's the only way to stop it. And I think CEDH inherently is kind of a broken tournament format. Having four people in one free for all setting, you're right, is kind of like a broken.
That's what we sign up for.
That's what we're signing up for. And everyone has like different experiences with different deals that they make. Not everyone is going to take that deal. Someone else is going to say, you know what? No, I am going to attack you and take you out because there's a better chance that I'll get a draw because you're just going to win if I untap.
Right.
Whereas the Itali player might not win if there's only two spins that they get off of their next Itali. Yeah. We might be able to get to a draw.
It's all part of the game. Yeah.
It's all part of the game. I mean, it depends on the setting that you're in too, right? So talking is the only way that you can get yourself out of king making. And a lot of times you can't get out of it because the king making scenario that comes up is you're in a tournament, someone's presenting a draw, and it makes no sense to not take the king making draw scenario instead of like letting someone else win. It would be silly to do that.
And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes what you should have done is something different two turns ago. Like right now that the king making situation is here. Yeah, there's nothing you can do now.
Nothing you can do now, but like you should have pushed like two turns ago, or like you shouldn't have let the smothering tithes off, whatever it is.
Right. And I think that's helpful too, of noticing like, okay, yeah, I can't do anything anymore, but had I countered that smothering tithe, this might have been avoidable. I might have been in a situation where we didn't have to draw right now.
I could have done this and I didn't do that. Think about like the opportunity cost of the previous things that you did in the game. Not everything is about the current moment that you were in. Sometimes
there's other moments.
Yeah, it's like, oh wait, something else happened that led up to this.
Yeah.
Aaron Cybertron Zhang is one of the best examples that I have of for me trying to like learn how this comes up, because at the end of every game he goes, you know, four turns ago I lost and this is how I did this.
Even when he wins, he's like, I could have won a little bit quicker had I done something. It would have been safer had I done something a little bit different on turn two. I still won the game, but he still takes a lesson. And I think going back to like testing with your friends and like testing for tournaments, that's like the most important thing. If you can like learn a little thing out of each of your game and realize like, oh, I could have won a little bit better or more safely.
Especially when you
win
by like something lucky. Like because someone, this is like Demonic Consultation, flipped their Underworld Breach in the top six or something, right?
It's like, well, I should have lost there probably.
If you win that game, you can't, like, you got to learn a different lesson about something else. You can't go, oh yeah, I can win that game.
Next question.
Cardinaw says this. Do you ever consider taking a small break from content creation to play in some tournaments?
No.
No, because tournaments do not pay the bills.
Yeah.
and content creation does. And even if tournaments paid, a lot of them pay in store credit or in Underworld's breaches or underground
which is cool.
Seas,
yeah.
Which is cool, but that's extra steps in order to try to make money off of that, and that doesn't work.
What we do is content. What I'm interested in is content. Like, I sometimes joke that, like, I'm barely even a CDH player. I'm a content creator that makes CDH content.
Honestly, because if I tried to be a tournament grinder, I think I would just end up being disappointed all of the time, is the other thing.
These results are pretty consistent with the content, at least for us specifically. We got kind of lucky. I think we formulated a good community. I don't think formulated is a word, but you know what I mean. Like, it's consistent. This is what I like doing. What I enjoy doing is creating content. And not to say that I don't like tournaments. Playing CDH is fun. Making content about CDH is fun. Tournaments are cool. I'm happy they exist for other people. I do like playing them when I can, but
I genuinely like casual CEDH more than tournaments.
I think
CEDH.
So too. Yeah. I think so too.
I've played enough of both at this point to kind of know.
Right. Yeah. Not to say anything bad about tournaments. I think they're awesome, and especially for the health of the format, that CEDH tournaments need to happen.
If I didn't like tournaments, I would say we should stop the Play to Win and Cloud City tournaments because I don't want to go to them.
Still
but
do
I
them.
Love them.
Yeah, exactly. So no, I don't have any thoughts of like slowing down the content creation. I've kind of locked in on this forever. Like, this is what I'm doing forever. And
plus, if you take a small break from content creation, you never come back from it.
And some people do a little bit. I'm not saying that you can't. Yeah, but we've committed that we will post a video every single Sunday forever.
And every single Friday forever, at least.
We're locked in forever. That's just what it is.
Yeah, and if even if there's an emergency, you're getting fucking something.
Yeah, another Q&A.
Yeah, exactly. Last time that happened was like right before I went full time and we had to do a chill to win.
Yeah, exactly.
Like for the holidays or something.
Yeah,
but it kind of worked out.
Up something.
All right, let's do one more.
I love it. One more.
Larson E. Roar says, how's Bleach going? What arc are you on?
Oh, we're on Attack on Titan now for Bleach.
That's the arc that we're on. Yeah.
Yeah, we finished Bleach. We're on Attack on Titan right now.
We finished Bleach as much as we could. The final season of all of Bleach is coming out this summer.
We're waiting for the dub, right?
I'm waiting for the dub, but it comes out like a week later than the subs.
Yeah, we're up to date. Yeah, that's what I mean.
We're up to date, and probably by the time we're done with Attack on Titan, that will start and we can do that.
Where are we at Attack on Titan right now?
We're in season 4 of Attack on Titan.
Spoilers? Well, so we'll say where we are. Spoilers if you're watching.
Spoiler
it came
alert.
Out forever ago, but Aaron just used the Jaw Titan to take the Warhammer Titan's power. We're like right around there. We're like just after that event.
Well, we got all of the flashback stuff that led up to that then, too.
Yeah, we're doing all the flashback stuff.
And so now, like, we're getting caught back up to...
We're realizing that Aaron is a fucker.
Aaron's a little fucker who kind of wants the rumbling to happen. Yeah.
We've known for a while now, but every episode it's like, oh, Aaron is fucking piece of shit.
We're still watching things that I have seen. The only thing that I have not seen of Attack on Titan are the final two movie season things.
Yeah, which are like they're so fucking cool, dude.
I know. It's like the final finality of everything.
They bring
it
all together.
Exactly. So I really can't, and I know some stuff. I was literally watching something this morning that gave me not like any spoiler, but now I know that like Reiner doesn't die.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, there we go.
Dude, it's so like upsetting watching it over again. It's so much more emotional. Like, I find myself like borderline crying so many more times now because I know how it ends. And like, everyone talks about Attack on Titan as like the foreshadowing is so fucking crazy in that show. And it is. Like, from the very beginning, they foreshadow fucking everything. Every time Mikasa says something to Eren, like, it's all such intense foreshadowing. It's so much more emotional the second time watch through, I think.
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree.
Yeah, but it's great. Attack on Titan's great. So is Bleach. Bleach, although Bleach is cool, Bleach. Truthfully, and
don't
Bleach,
do it. Don't do
you
it.
You don't want me to say this. Bleach needs to. I think Bleach needs to be redone. I think.
Oh no, you can say that. Oh, I thought you were gonna say something else.
Nothing
okay.
about the boobs. No, that's a different thing. But Bleach is fucking awesome. It's so cool. The rule of cool is to the 11th degree. Every character is the coolest looking character you've ever seen. The powers are so cool. But you can tell the anime was like mainly done in a time where they were like censoring what the manga was, and it was like they were trying to gear it towards children. It felt like when they didn't necessarily need to be geared towards children.
No.
And there's a lot of filler, which is fucking annoying, and we have to skip through a ton of it. And there's a lot of like drags at moments where it doesn't really need to drag. And I feel
the
like
the comedy is
like,
not funny.
Comedy is not good. No, Bleach comedy is not good. But like the action scenes are undoubtedly cool. All of the character designs are like for anime. The character design for Bleach is 10 out of 10. It's the best. Right?
The Thousand Year Blood War is just like peak anime in every degree.
The Thousand Year. I wish they redid the rest of it in the style of Thousand Year Blood
War. Exactly.
Thousand Year Blood War is undoubtedly cool. Like the pacing is pretty much fixed. Everything is cool. The characters. All of their fucking swords are fucking awesome. But like in the beginning, it's like, I don't know. It's like, oh, we got to get through this.
We got to get through so much. Yeah. My new thing with Bleach is like you read up through the Arrancar arc, and then after you get past that, Thousand Year Blood War, you watch.
Yeah, yeah, that makes more sense. And like Fullbringer, for me, that didn't make any sense. I feel like the show was going into one direction, and they were like, oh, then now there's this like whole other fucking thing or something.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like it's a filler arc.
Yeah, even though it's not.
Out of nowhere, but like we kind of needed a way for Ichigo to get his powers back.
Yeah.
We just did it this way.
That was the way they did it, I guess.
And I guess we wanted a fourth race to put in there.
Then yeah, I don't know. But Bleach is awesome. I have nothing really bad to say about it, except for all the bad stuff that I just said.
And it's a little too horny. It's not the most horny out there, but it's definitely
you're like, you can skip.
There's definitely fast forwardable moments.
Yeah, a couple of us.
I like it for the art design and the powers. I love cool swords. It's my favorite.
They're like call out for their powers is the coolest thing ever when they do like Ichigo Dajo or whatever like they say. Oh, it's so badass.
Well, yeah, just every Bankai announcement is so good. I love them.
We're at, what are we at, 49 right now. We can maybe do one more.
Let's do one more, yeah. Gear Bear Garrett says, what are your thoughts on Magic printing so many functionally identical cards? Atali loves clones, but the singleton identity of Commander seems less and less pronounced with the current rate of sets and similar effects coming out per year. Well, there's only so many things that a Magic card could do, right? Yeah. Like, we print so many every year.
Yeah, I think it's fine that they are getting less of the singleton aspect of it and there's more synergy. I personally, one of my favorite things about Magic in general is, like I said, like building my team. So, like, building a consistent strategy is, like, the main goal for me when I'm ever building a deck because I want something that's really consistent. So I like that there's more things of the same thing that do similar things. I personally think that's good.
Me too, because, like, we stem from 60-card formats. Right. So we're used to being able to do those same of the best effect that we want in the deck.
And I think that makes it very fun to like think to yourself when you have a decision, should I do this Twin Flame or that Twin Flame? Do I do Molten Duplication now or do I do Twin Flame now? Do I want to make sure that I copy an artifact because I'm playing around Lightning Bolts for my Molten Duplication, or do I want to use a Twin Flame now because maybe I want to Strive it this time or something like that? I think those like minor differences, I think that's like super interesting gameplay, and I think that's really fun. So I like it that there's more cards that are doing similar things. I wish they would do a little bit even more of that, because it seems like they lock in on like, what if Red made a clone that had haste and then die at the end of turn? What if we did that 100 times? And like, that is cool, but like, what if we had a Dark Ritual that was it made 2 mana instead of 3, and it was 1 mana to make 2 mana? Like, that would be so fucking fun.
Oh, well, they're not gonna. They've decided that that's not a home that Black has.
Right.
Rituals is not something that. But I understand where you're going with that. Like, what if we just like keep leaning into like the more powerful things instead of like the silly things that we keep doing with it instead, which Atali is like weirdly benefiting from at the same time.
And I do think that they are trying to do that. I feel like we've had a couple situations recently where they've made callbacks to iconic cards of Magic's history. We just had all the Secrets of Strixhaven things where they're like the Demonic Tutor was on a creature and all this shit, and we just had like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles set where they had like the sneak cards, and
there's a lot more of this happening.
So far none of them have been like super powerful in the strategies that I want to play, but I would love to see more of that stuff. Like Yu-Gi-Oh does cool shit like this where like, I don't know the specifics, but they have cards that like go find 3 blue-eyed white dragons and put them into play or something like that, where like they call out the card specifically. I think Magic would be cool if we did more stuff like that where it said like, go search your library for a card named Oracle and put it in your hand, not that specifically or whatever. Like, I think it would be cool to like call out iconic cards on the text and go get them, make a copy of Dark Ritual on the stack, you know, or something like that. I would love to see more of that in Magic.
We
in general.
Do that, but they're always bad. They're like always Garth bad. One Eye did that, and it was really bad. Yeah,
I would love to see good
We're
versions
gonna keep,
of that.
Oh, we won't get that because we know that they're too good. Yeah, I think it ends up being like good for everyone who wants it, and if you don't want it, then it doesn't matter. You don't have to abide by it. Like, if you're playing CEDH, like, you're going to want to make your deck as good as possible. Why do you care about the singleton nature of the format then if your deck is better, right? But if you're playing casual Commander, sure. If you only want to play 1 Twin Flame in your Atali deck, you can do that.
I see this notion a couple times where like casual players will say like, now I feel like I'm forced to play Marshmallow Pizza in my deck.
Why do you, the casual side of thing, that's never made sense to me. Why do you, the casual player, going back to like Big Legs Banjo's question, why do you, the casual player, feel like you need to be on top of every single thing
that comes out?
Yeah, if you feel overwhelmed, why do you feel like you need to to do this. You need to buy Turtles packs to get the pizza card? Like, no.
No, you
buy singles of only the things that you care about.
Yeah, if you're playing casual, there's no reason to play cards that are silly because of the universe is beyond shit. Like, there's a world where you think, like, oh, my deck is going to become less powerful over time. But, like, realistically,
what do you care about if you're not playing in tournaments?
Right, yeah. What do you care? And, like, even if you want to win tables with your friends and stuff, you can still make a very powerful deck with old, powerful cards. You are allowed to play Game Changers now. Put fucking Demonic Tutor in your deck. Don't play the Marshmallow card. Put a powerful card in your deck. You're allowed. Like,
I guess that's the other thing. Yeah, like, does your casual pod allow for tutors? Because they're already breaking the singleton rule if that's the case, right? Even if you play, like, Stoneforge Mystic, you're now breaking the singleton rule, I would say. It's a tutor. Any tutor. Verdant Catacombs means you can play two by
breaking the rules.
All of a sudden, yeah.
If you tutor my casual pod, I concede.
Yeah, if you... the second you crack Evolving Wilds,
I'm
done. Yeah. Yeah, so if you play Evolving Wilds in your deck or two basic lands, there goes the whole singleton thing. And, I don't know. Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
The egg came first.
Well, yeah, because the chicken came from another bean. It came from a Tali.
The egg hatched from something that was like a chicken, but not really a chicken.
Yo, in the future set, we're going to go to a set that's 65 million years in the future, and a Tali is going to be a chicken.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we should do that.
That'll be hysterical. A Tali chicken.
Yeah, that's good. All right, any other final thoughts? You noticed my shirt? Richard got it for me. It's a Chihuahua.
I did. I do love that shirt. That is so sweet.
Thank you so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Mac the Mad Seabass. Not Careth, Bob the Skull, Davisher, Abyss AA, Pedgy, E4 Cards and More, Red Finks MTG, Wandering Around, Mike H, Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Okie Toad, Pingo Man, 089, David Newman, Johnny Never, Omelette, Rocky Hall, Pat Fires, Spangler, Larceny Wars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, SC Phillip, Only Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Legs Banjo, Reactive, Sean on the Ice, The Works 472, Gabriel Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Zippon, Joshua Day, Demon of Raspberries, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Duke Loot, Quaja A, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thanks, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code playtowin5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off.
You can follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Max UE, Bub Russell, Devin Morrow, Ruby Supreme, Willow 2998, Turtle 99, Rick Shardicus, Taizo Kitagama, Mick Saucy, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Safarius, Vietnam 69, Sarcastic, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Dalton Poteet, Jan Wild Thing, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.